welcome to another episode of What Matters in North Carolina. As always, I'm your host, Matt Calder, and we are glad to have you here on the show. Whether you're listening on the airwaves out there across the state of North Carolina, or whether you are listening on the website at freedomactionnetwork.com, or you're listening in the app and you're a subscriber, whether it is an Apple or an Android system, we're glad to have you. But I will say, if you're not a subscriber, we want you to go ahead and do that and subscribe, because it is the easiest way for you to get the show to your device. If you're an Apple user, use Apple Podcasts. If you're an Android user, you can download one of the many free podcasting apps if you don't already have one on your phone, and just go search for What Matters in North Carolina there and subscribe to the show. You get it to your device as soon as we put it out there, and you'll have it to listen to at your leisure. And that is the easiest way and most efficient way to get the show to your device, to get it to your ears. Now, I'm going to go ahead and take this opportunity to thank our sponsor as well, the Civitas Institute, and that they can be found at nccivitas.org. That is North Carolina's conservative voice. Without them, this show and the Freedom Action Network would not exist. It would not be possible. You will be doing something else right now. I will be doing something else right now. So we're glad that they are supporting the show. Now, another outlet they support is NC Capital Connection, which is a state-based news website. I do some work over there as well. And if you want to, you can follow along with their newsletter at up at the top, subscribing to their newsletter. It's every 2 weeks on Thursday. And do that as well at nccapitalconnection.com. Also, we want you to follow along with us on social media, and do that on Facebook and Twitter by searching What Matters NC on Facebook and Twitter. Now, without further ado, we will talk about today's segments. We have two great interviews for you today, two segments, where first we will be talking with Dr. Robert Libke of the Civitas Institute. He is the policy director over there at the Civitas Institute, where we will be talking about whether the state has a role in collecting dues for organizations, private organizations that are lobbying, such as the North Carolina Association of Educators, or the State Employees Association of North Carolina, and whether the state has any role collecting dues for them instead of having people pay their own dues. Then we'll talk with Brooke Medina, who you've heard on the show plenty of times as well, also the Civitas Institute, about Charlie Rose and the allegations coming out there, really through the lens of, does it make sense for the North Carolina Journalism Hall of Fame to go back and remove his induction to the Hall of Fame when he was inducted in 1999? And whether or not it's editing history, or whether it's an appropriate thing to do, and you'll just have to listen to that segment to see where that all goes. But again, I want to thank you for being with us here on the show, and we will now get to our segment with Dr. Robert Libke. Bob, welcome back to the show.
It's good to be here, Matt. Did you have a good Thanksgiving?
I did. I ate a lot of turkey, but honestly, not too much turkey. I did pretty good. What about yourself?
I did. I enjoy lots of turkey, but the best part about Thanksgiving is the leftovers. So I've been eating turkey, and I will continue to do so probably for the next week.
Oh yeah, for me it's the day after. Cold turkey sandwich is the absolute best thing about Thanksgiving. Like the warm, perfect, fresh turkey, that's great. I enjoy it. I love it. Everyone around the table, it's great. But what I really like is when I go to the leftovers in the fridge the next day, get my two pieces of bread, my mayonnaise, my pepper, my hot sauce, and my turkey, all on the sandwich, and just go sit in my recliner and eat my turkey sandwich alone.
Couldn't agree more.
Just me and the sandwich, and that's it. And then the next day is when my Tigers play the Gamecocks every year, and I'll have another turkey sandwich that day.
Well, it seems the turkey sandwich has brought you some luck so far.
Oh, yes, yes. It's been a very solid last three, four years. I think I might be five now, because we won every year with Deshaun Watson, and now Kelly Bryant's taking his first victory at the South Carolina Championship.
Well, our teams may be playing each other, so.
Right, right. You're
Wisconsin.
Yeah, Wisconsin. I mean, you're top four right now.
That's right. That's right.
Unfortunately, your team falls into a category, and Oklahoma too, of what I like to call the token west of the Mississippi teams. Because, as I say, they don't play football west of the Mississippi. They just let them in every once in a while. They have them in the top four, floating around the top to keep that part of the country interested. You know, real football is played in the South.
Well, unless we've turned this into a sports talk radio program, I'm not going to respond to that right now.
I mean, you can respond. I mean, this program is to let people...
Geography lesson number one, Wisconsin is not west of the Mississippi.
Okay, that's a good point. But what I am saying, outside of the South, football is not played outside of the South in college, on the college level.
That's a point of contention.
Okay, you got Stanford, you got UCLA over in California, and they're sometimes competitive and to be talked about. But at the end, it's always going to come down to, you know, 9 times out of 10, teams in the South.
Well, I mean, you might be able to say that convincingly for the last 10 years. But if you look at
the last 10 years is over a third of my life.
Well, but football existed prior to you being around.
I know it did, because in 1985, Clemson won the national championship.
Well, these things go in cycles.
Oh, I know, so. I know.
But any, all in good fun.
Oh, it's been a great year to watch, though. It's been a great year to watch. Honestly, though, I would love to see a return of last year and the year prior, Clemson, Alabama. It's not going to happen, but that would be the 2 out of 3 if we won. You know, it's like they won 1 year, we won 1 year. We could go and get the 2 out of 3.
Yeah, I may think those two may be the two best teams, but that's why they play.
That's true. Although Auburn is the one I don't want to play. I don't want it to come down to Auburn, because then we're playing a team that has on-the-field experience with us this season, and I think they're a dangerous team.
Should be interesting to watch.
Definitely. But anyway, that's not why we're here. You're right. Thanksgiving is not why we're here, and football is not why we are here. We are here to talk today about the it was brought up in the news recently again, but it's been an issue for you for the last 6 years or so, or out in front, and that is that NCAE, the North Carolina Association of Educators, a lobbying group for educators in the state, has a system where their dues can be deducted straight from the paychecks of the teachers. The teachers are state employees, and the state has been collecting dues for NCAE for how long?
Well, actually, I don't exactly know how long that's been around, Matt, but it's been quite some time.
And not just NCAE, though,
that's
too.
That's correct.
It's other groups, but NCAE.
Actually, technically, 13 other employee associations.
Okay, right. So, State Employees Association,
yeah,
North
Sheriff
Carolina.
Association, state employees, other groups, some local Carrboro, Chapel Hill Teachers Union, and a couple other and smaller entities. But by far and far and away, the two largest groups are the State Employees Association of North Carolina and North Carolina Association of Educators.
Right, and NCAE gets the attention because of their recent refusal to cooperate with the state auditor to figure out if they have enough members, a high enough threshold, to warrant having their dues deducted, having it done by the state, and not having to get their own membership dues and collect their own dues, right?
That's correct. Matt, that's been the source of the recent publicity, is that in 2014, the Republican legislature had passed a law saying in order for groups to continue receiving the dues checkoff benefits, that they had to have their membership certified by the state auditor. For the last 3 years, the state auditor has conducted an audit, but basically in the audit they said in no uncertain terms that they haven't been able to complete it because NCAE would not furnish the membership information. And they said that they were, as a private entity, the state auditor was not compelled to provide information to the state auditor, which is true. But what's also true is the law states that NCAE must provide this information. And in order to qualify for the dues checkoff benefits, the membership numbers have to be certified. Those have not been certified for the last 3 years, yet the NCAE continues to receive that benefit. Now, that benefit is substantial in the sense that the state is providing an administrative function for a private organization, and that is actually providing the financial transactions from individual employees to an administrative arm of the organization. That has a value to it. Obviously, the option is to have individuals perform those functions themselves, have to write the individual checks, mail them either electronically or through the mail. People have to take time and expense to do that. It's easier from the organization side that things are done this way, and it has monetary value, obviously, to the organization. Now, they do that also for the other entities that we're talking about, the State Employees Association and other smaller groups. Actually, two other teachers' groups receive the same benefit, but they have complied on the membership requirements.
And the whole, the overarching kind of expected reason for not complying would be maybe that they don't meet this threshold. And that's what Senator Ralph Heiss is who's leading the charge in a lot of ways to get this program gone for all these groups.
There are two thresholds here. The NCAE has one threshold, which is 40,000 members, and when the legislation was written, the membership of NCAE would not have had difficulty, reaching those numbers or having that or meeting that threshold. That wasn't a problem.
And is that all teachers, or because more than just teachers can
it's
join?
Total
NCAE,
membership,
right?
But the way this statute is written, half of which have to be public school teachers. Now, when people say NCAE, most people think of teachers, but you don't have to be a teacher to be a member of NCAE. You can be an administrator. You can be an educational support person. You can also have a retirement status. In other words, be a retired teacher. But the way the statute is written, half of the total membership of that 40,000 has to be public school teachers. So that's the other additional requirement put on it. So that threshold, the 40,000 threshold, is the threshold that NCAE must meet. The other thresholds are only 2,000 members that are pertinent to the other organizations. So those have been met.
So why is there a different threshold?
Well, I think it was different because oftentimes, and this is my guess, when you're trying to make a reference to a specific organization, and the organization is as large as NCAE, you don't want to write them specifically into the legislation.
Right. I mean, you can't.
You can't. So what you do is you take some sort of statistical reference that
and
would
yeah,
apply
you do
to
with,
only
with
them.
Cities too.
That's
a
right.
City
like
of a certain size.
City of
blah, 700 blah, blah.
Of more than 750,000. You know, would be Charlotte. You know. So, I think. And this is my guess. I don't know, but oftentimes that's the case.
A carve out that's not now gone seriously awry.
Yes, and it would at the time, obviously, 40,000. That would apply obviously only to NCAE because there's no other organization that does what they do that has that membership.
So that's sort of in a way kind of funny if you think about it. So I mean, because this law was created under Democrat control, right? You're saying?
Well, it was the actual dues checkoff when it started. It predated the Republicans,
right?
And unless it happened in the time period, the one time period in like 90 to 94, when Republicans controlled, I think the House, but Republicans have not controlled all three arms of government since the turn of the century. In the 1890s. So it predated Republicans, put it that way. And
right.
By and
so
large, it was primarily influenced by the Democrats.
Who would tend to be more friendly to this idea?
Well,
so it could be said that it was probably a carve-out where it was meant to be something beneficial to NCAE that is now possibly blowing up in their face.
Yes. Again, NCA not being the only group here, obviously these are political considerations. Let's not be naive about it. They're teachers, by and large, teachers unions have overwhelmingly supported Democratic candidates.
Oh yeah.
There are preferences on for these other groups, and memories are short in politics. And it's also true that when Republicans took, when Republicans gained the majority in 2010 in the legislature, in the Senate, and the House, many of the new representatives that took office there had come through bruising battles with NCA-backed candidates, and so they were spit and nails in a lot of instances. So what happened in 2011, that's when the initial bill that we referenced before to eliminate dues checkoff, that was when it was passed.
And it wasn't dues checkoffs for these 13 programs, right?
No, it was specifically targeted on NCAE, and that was the problem.
Exactly. So they and they've done this a number of times on a number of different issues and campaign, you know, programs. Campaigns, not political campaigns, but you know what I mean. They're trying to accomplish different things. They've shot themselves in the foot, I think, from a point of they were out of power for so long and there's so much bad blood there. They came out swinging in 2010, and I think they swung and they missed on this one and other things too.
Yeah, and what we're talking about metaphorically is the provision in the bill was challenged constitutionally, and it, without going into more detail, it was not upheld because it was classified as viewpoint discrimination, i.e., it singled out NCAE, which it cannot do legally. And so there was basically a permanent injunction lodged against the bill. And right. So it has not been implemented.
Right. But I would say that if they had the juice in 2011 to pass the legislation going against NCAE, they had the juice to knock this program out for all 13 of these groups, which why is the state collecting their dues anyway? Why is the state spending resources collecting their dues and not having the group do it itself?
And that is really the fundamental point that we need to talk about. When this was passed in 2011 and when an injunction was lodged against it because of the viewpoint problems, the solution, and I remember writing about this was 6 years ago, the solution to all of it is just make them all, just eliminate all of them. And it's rather easy to do. Now, there were political considerations at the time why that didn't happen. I'm not going to go into all of them, but let's just say politics clouded how the issue was addressed. Now, this past session, Senator Ralph Heiss, who's been at the center of a lot of this controversy, introduced a bill to do just that, SB 375, I think it is.
Right.
And it eliminates the state from performing dues checkoff for any organization.
As it should. I mean, this is independent of politics. This is not how does NCAE or CNC, you know, State Employees Association of North Carolina, how are they acting? How are they, you know, using their influence? Like, it to me, I don't care. It doesn't matter for this. This shouldn't exist anyway. This is a carve out. This is a carve out that's costing taxpayers time. This shouldn't exist.
That's right. It puts the state in the position of picking winners and losers. It kind of tilts the playing field. And
right, which is ridiculous to me.
That's right. And there's no reason why state government should be doing this, providing the benefit to a private organization.
Right.
It makes no sense.
And this is low-hanging fruit for me. This is one of the first things you can cut. Instead of sitting here and squabbling and arguing over whether or not we should be funding the Country Doctor Museum, let's talk about cutting this program for all of these people and saying, we're not picking up your dues anymore. You go out and collect your own membership dues if you want them. We're not going to do it for you. There's no reason that they should be doing it. There's just no connection there for why the state should do it. Like, is there a reason the state should?
No. I mean, what it does is it benefits when it was put in. It benefited the party in power who was supported largely by the recipients of the benefits.
Right. And again, this is independent of who's got the power. From a conservative point of view, not a Republican point of view, not a Democrat point of view, from a conservative point of view, this is something the government should not be doing.
In fact, there are two other teachers' associations that would be impacted by this, by Senator Heiss's bill, one of which, you know, we would probably align up with more philosophically. But the point is, it shouldn't be, the benefits should not be provided by state government to any private organization. It makes no sense.
Right. I mean, if I want to, you know, if I want to give money to be a member, to join this association, that's your choice to do it. So cut the check. Have them draw it from your account, however you want to pay for it. Mail them cash. You join your own association, who you freely associate with, and you can pay your own dues. I mean, you say I wanted to join the NRA. Let's say I was a state employee and I wanted to join the NRA. Could I get the state to take my dues out to join the NRA? Could I get the state to take my dues out to join the Wake County Taxpayers Association or whatever association it was that was politically active, if it wasn't a teachers union or it wasn't a state employees union? Would this state do that for me?
Probably not.
I wouldn't think so.
So, yeah, and that's the problem, is it does not pass the smell test on any level.
It doesn't.
And the point is, we need to get this bill passed. Now, the legislation we're talking about, SB 375, was passed by the Senate. Now, it did not get consideration by the House before the legislature adjourned.
It's because the House isn't actually conservative, but in a lot of ways, I have noticed in my few years here covering the legislature that they're not that conservative.
They're not as conservative as the Senate. That's
they're definitely
true.
Not.
That's true. So, you know, we hope that this idea of eliminating these dues checkoffs for all these employee associations, you know, can gain traction in the House, and it's this legislation can be, you know, picked up again in January when they come back. So it can be picked up before that, I guess, if emergency dictates.
Emergency would not dictate, I would say. They've been back too many times as it is. So emergency would not dictate this. They're already coming back earlier than expected. That they would.
Well, that was my little reference to the fact that oftentimes the agenda of these special sessions are kind of a little open-ended.
Oh, yes. They definitely
by design,
are.
By design.
And I'm sure from this entire segment, the only thing that's going to be remembered is that Matt Calder said that the House isn't conservative, and Dr. Robert Lipke made a joke about the special sessions being too open-ended. Those are the two takeaway points.
No, I'm saying they are open-ended, and that's the way it is. I mean, they're written to be able to get business done, and they always leave themselves an out, and that's reality. Of course,
they're not going to limit themselves.
But the point is, for all of this, is what our listeners need to know is state government shouldn't be doing this.
Exactly.
They're performing an administrative function for private organizations only because most of the employees of these associations supported political candidates, you know, of the party in power.
Exactly. And again, the issue, you know, the public portion of this seems to be, does the NCAA have enough members to qualify this dues checkoff? I don't care. I don't think ultimately at the end of the day you care as much as you would just want the program done away for everyone, because it's, as you said, it is the state performing an administrative task for a private entity that is not the business of the state to do.
That's correct. That's the argument that trumps everything. Now, if you actually want to rely on the facts, you know, and look at the actual numbers for the last several years, and the audit report goes over this, and if there are a number of websites that I've referenced in some of the articles I've read that show that the numbers for the last 3 years have been below 40,000. And so I don't know. I mean, if those numbers were above 40,000, don't you think NCAE would just give them the numbers? And so they
validate everything. I don't think they're holding a moral high ground
here. That's right.
I don't think that they're standing on principle by not releasing these numbers. We're not going to release these numbers on the pure principle. No,
they'd only be hurting themselves.
They probably don't have the numbers.
Yeah, I'm sure that I'd be stunned if they had the numbers. And in fact, the numbers that we reference in these articles are from a gentleman named Mike Antonucci, who for a fair number of years, has run a website called Education Intelligence Agency. One of the things that they do is track a lot of NEA data. And when I say NEA, National Educational Association, NCAE is an affiliate of NEA. So if you're an NCAE member, you're an NEA member. And once a year, they provide data on NEA affiliates by state. And so we've been able to get that information that he publishes from, and he gets it from NEA people, that tracks membership. And for the last 3 years, those numbers have not been at 40,000. So if they were, I see no reason why they wouldn't have complied.
Oh, I agree. And again, thank you for coming on, and good luck to your guys over in Wisconsin and all the cheese and good luck in the in what seems to be they might be making it into the semifinals.
We will see. We will see. They have to get past the Ohio State tomorrow.
Oh yeah,
on Saturday.
We'll see how the next week or so goes.
All right. Good to be with you, Matt.
It's good to have you. If you like this show and want to hear a segment again, or want to check out one of our past shows, head over to freedomactionnetwork.com. Or check out some of the other shows the Freedom Action Network has to offer, like Free to Brew, where host Greg Polcher uncovers how freeing up markets, protecting property rights, and an entrepreneur spirit has rejuvenated the craft beer industry. Listen to the show for interviews and commentary from brewers, policy experts, and more. Let Greg show you there is liberty in beer. Or check out the NC Gun Dad Show, hosted by me, Matt Calder, where I talk about guns, gun rights, and Second Amendment issues of the day. Also, where we explore how being a father informs being a responsible gun owner, and more. Again, that can all be found on the Freedom Action Network website at www.freedomactionnetwork.com. Brooke, thanks for coming on the show again.
Glad to be here, Matt.
So we're kind of continuing the saga in a way. I mean, we can't really escape it. We've talked on the political side. We've talked on the Hollywood side. But now we're going to the media side of the discussion with the news that came out about Charlie Rose and the probably close to 10 allegations from women sexual harassment, not sexual assault so much as sexual harassment, I believe, from what I've read. Is that right?
I think there were a couple of groping charges as well.
Okay.
So.
I missed those.
Yeah. So it seems like it's a myriad of different charges. He says that he, you know, was not guilty of all of them, but he did outright, you know, admit that he had been quote unquote insensitive to ladies. I think there's stronger language for it than that, but you know, that's what his statement said when he issued it almost immediately after the charges were made public. So,
right. He did respond very quickly. I mean, as far as these things go, he came out and said, you know, I hear you. I'm deeply sorry for this. I mean, this stuff. And he really, I mean, he knew it was coming.
Yeah.
There's no question there.
Oh, I'm sure he was fully aware of there was an internal investigation. I can only imagine, you know, that was happening under the radar. So, so he owned part of it at least right away. And I think that that was likely the best approach to take. It was similar to, was it Louis C.K. who did the same thing, immediately responded by owning what he had done. That still doesn't negate the fact that it's been done, but it, I think it helps at least move the process along more quickly when it comes to the investigation and things like that.
See, I didn't even know Louis C.K. was caught up in all this stuff.
Oh,
I didn't. I mean, I've said it before, kind of before the segment or yesterday or something. But there's too many to keep up with. There's at this point, there's honestly too much stuff just cascading and avalanching out for me to keep up with everybody who's been accused.
Right. Yes, I agree. It's difficult to keep up with, and to be honest, it's not fun keeping up with it. It's a tragedy. Your heart is broken if you know these people personally, I am sure, because this morning on the Today Show, when it was announced that Matt Lauer would not be coming back to the show anymore, he had been terminated, and just to see his co-host's response and hear their response and how they were processing it, it just makes it very, you know, real to those who are maybe far removed from these actual allegations, as to, you know, that there is a definite emotional human toll on being accused of doing these sort of things. And obviously, if they are guilty and there are victims involved, then, you know, that human toll is far greater. So it's just sad all the way around. It feels like you're walking in dirt and mud when you're even discussing it. But these are things that are very relevant to what is going on in our society and in our culture right now. And so it's unavoidable that we discuss it. We cannot sweep it under the rug because it's been swept under the rug for decades now.
Oh yeah, and I agree. I mean, it needs to be discussed and talked about. But I mean, I just did a quick search, you know, and the Matt Lauer is the one that comes up top. But there's also another one, this Andrew Kreisberg, who works on The Flash and Arrow and Supergirl, those CW shows. My wife and I love those shows. I mean, those are the shows we watch every week. In fact, we were watching them last night, and I go, well, wow, I had no idea about this one either. I mean, it's, and you're right, though, we talked about before kind of how it's an issue of where we're at as a society in a lot of ways, what we're accepting, what we're taking in. We talked about, like, that sort of thing, but it's decades and decades. I mean, Charlie Rose is not a new personality, a new person, not like this showrunner for Flash and Arrow on CW, or, you know, Matt Lauer, he's been around for a while, but he's not been around as long as Charlie Rose has. I mean, it's to Bill Cosby. I mean, right. How long has Bill Cosby been in this sphere? We're talking decades of people of influence in media, whether it's entertainment or news or people in political circles or people in these other areas that are now being, all this stuff's coming to light. It's decades worth of improprieties coming out at one time. So it feels like it's just this avalanche, but it's not like everything's coming from the past 3 years or past year, or past 6 months. It's decades worth of people who haven't come forward talking now.
Right. I mean, well, even thinking about Roy Moore, he is now, you know, being accused of stuff that those who are accusing him said happened 40 years ago. So this is going back really, really far. And it makes it difficult, right? When we're considering evidence, we need, when you're considering assaults, and I'm no police officer or investigator, but it's just, you know, it's obvious that you need clear evidence, whether that be physical evidence. That's typically how they would assess whether or not someone had some culpability in the matter. But in these cases, it's a lot of ways, it's a he said, she said. But you can also look at people's character. You can look at how they treat others when the cameras aren't rolling, you know, but still, it's just, it's murky waters. It's never just clean and cut. It's not always easy to tell, well, this person's guilty because they're a jerk anyway, so I want to believe they're guilty, or this person's innocent because I really, really like them anyways, they're a Republican, they're a Democrat. You know, we can't look at it through that lens. And the most we can hope for as people that are just watching this unfold is that the truth went out. And but in the case of Charlie Rose in particular, like we had mentioned at the beginning, he admitted to at least some of these allegations being true, which leads me to what a piece I had actually written about this, because Charlie Rose is a North Carolina native and had been inducted into the North Carolina Journalism Hall of Fame. He had also received an honorary degree from Duke University. Now, he had two degrees from Duke that he had actually earned, but had also received this honorary degree. And just, there are some, there were a couple of articles that I found in the state papers that were asking, you know, should his name be removed from the Journalism Hall of Fame? You know, should we revoke these different honors that have been bestowed upon him? I know the Cronkite Award was rescinded.
From Arizona.
Yeah, that was from Arizona. Yeah, so that already was rescinded.
That was 2014. He was awarded the Cronkite Award, I believe. It was fairly recent. But his induction to the North Carolina Journalism Hall of Fame for UNC was in 1999. It's, you know, going on 20 years ago, mm-hmm. that he was inducted to the Hall of Fame. And that, for me, that sort of changes things in a way of is it really worth going back and changing that? It seems like a lot of effort in bringing it up. I mean, would anybody have brought up that he was in the Hall of Fame had they not seemed to have brought up that he was in the Hall of Fame? Is one question I wonder. And I wonder, is what's the reason why? Is it to hurt Charlie Rose? Is it to take away that honor to punish him? Is it to make the Hall of Fame not look bad for having Charlie Rose in the Hall of Fame? It depends on the motivations for me, whether or not they should do it.
Right. Well, that's a good point. And also, you know, what is the Hall of Fame, the Journalism Hall of Fame, about? To what extent does character matter when we're assessing someone's talents? That's a difficult question to answer because, well, in reality, I guess, because theoretically, most of us would say character always matters. I mean, that is part of who we are, right? How we treat people. If we treat people like dirt, it doesn't matter how many, you know, moral platitudes I can quote and things like that. At the core of who we are, if we're dirtbag, we're dirtbag.
I would definitely say, let's say that all this information had come out in 1998. Charlie Rose would not be getting inducted to the Hall of Fame in 1999.
Correct. Yep.
No way, no how. His name would not be up for consideration at all.
Right. But and so that's a good point. And it begs the question, how much do we or should we edit history? So, you know, I was telling you this before we started recording and saying we live in this age where we can edit everything. We can delete tweets. We can edit our Facebook posts. We have spell check and, you know, it tells us when we're in error so we can correct it. But in real life, we can't go back and change things of the past, at least like words that have been spoken or actions that have been committed. Now, we can change our or how we view someone after certain things, whether good or bad, have come to light. But we can't, or we shouldn't, try to edit history. History textbooks have been edited throughout the years. It's an unfortunate thing, and they've been revised to, I mean, look at Iran, right? They say the Holocaust never happened. So, you know, stupid stuff like that happens. But for us to be intellectually honest and also to leave a history to those that come 3, 4, 5 generations from now, I think it would behoove us to actually just allow certain things to stay where they're at, as far as like the Charlie Rose induction into the Hall of Fame or getting his honorary degree. And also just, but not skirt around his moral failings too. And I think that we can have that tension and we can have those conversations that need to be had, which is just because someone is talented does not mean they're virtuous. We've seen, you know, football players that have abused their girlfriends, or women maybe that have held decapitated heads of our president, a fake one, you know, as a joke, like Kathy Griffin. So people are a compilation of triumphs and failures, and that's a real true picture of what humanity is. It does not excuse and it does not dismiss horrible behavior that is absolutely inexcusable, such as that by Charlie Rose, but it does help us not feel the need to police everything that has happened that's beyond our control.
Right. And what I think about sort of in this is kind of going to sports in a way. And we've already talked about one of those things, and being, you know, Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire. I came up in that time, you know, baseball, and turns out they were on steroids. So what they did didn't really count in a way. Bad fruit, you know, bad. It came from something they shouldn't have been doing with the steroids, so what the output doesn't count. And you can say, okay, well, the UNC investigation, which they didn't do anything to UNC, which is a sticking point for me, but I believed they should have taken away championships, taken away wins for these ineligible players playing. They're taking fake classes and playing. They should not have been eligible. Those wins should not count, in my mind. Mm-hmm. They didn't do anything like that to them like I thought they would have or could have. But anyway, then I think about Joe Pa and, you know, Penn State, Joe Paterno, Jerry Sandusky, that case. And you remember that one, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they vacated 111 wins of Joe Paterno for that time period, no longer having him as the winningest coach in football, taking that, you know, record away from him. But you could say, you know, having the actions of Jerry Sandusky to all those kids, which, while awful, did not have an effect so much on the play. It wasn't directly tied. So that's kind of the Charlie Rose thing. What he did outside of his, you know, the media he produced, did it directly affect what he did in the media, the allegations, you know what I'm saying here, for being inducted to the Hall of Fame in 1999.
So, well, and the thing is, as with the case of Jerry Sandusky, those that actually knew about that bad behavior and those that were aware of Charlie Rose's behavior, because I'm pretty sure there were at least some people that probably had some inclinations that he was behaving in that way, since there were so many accusers that came out. Where are the executives that are aware of these things? And why is it incumbent upon the Hall of Fame committee to, you know, rescind this honor, rather than should it not have been the executives that, you know, instead chose to put profit over, you know, good behavior and character? So, you know, that there's that whole culture within, not even just within corporatism. It seems like with all these accusations coming out, it's within every sector of society, whether that be religious, secular, profit, nonprofit. There needs to be accountability, and the sooner the better. And when people discover that others are treating people in an undignified manner, it needs to be nipped in the bud. But when we place like that name recognition, which brands our institution and makes us, you know, earns us a lot of money, when we put that ahead of people that are victims, you know, we have no one to blame but ourselves. And so, in my article, my argument is really that, you know, these things sadly happen, but leadership, both in the public and the private sector, need to act on the belief that men and women have inherent dignity, and they need to make hiring and firing decisions based on that belief, rather than just letting journalists stay in power or stay in position because they're earning them a lot of ratings.
Right. I mean, and I agreed with pulling Joe Pa's wins, and because he knew there were things it became clear that he knew, which they ended up actually returning them after he died, 3 years after he died. But in that case, I agreed with the punishment there, even though it wasn't directly tied to what the allegations and then, you know, things that were proved in court, or I think Sandusky settled. But anyway, that were then shown to be accurate. In this case, I mean, I started off kind of thinking maybe it's you shouldn't go back and do anything about this. But if it's done as a punishment to Charlie Rose, as opposed to trying to clear a scuff off of the Hall of Fame, I could see it a little more. I'm not going to say whether or not I would do it. I'm not going to go down that road for sure. But I definitely understand some of the reasoning for doing it.
Right. How could you not, really? You know, it's a difficult position to be in. The ones that are going to make that decision are going to be the Halls of Fame committee.
Yeah, and they'll take flack whether they decide to do anything or decide to do nothing. And if they had never even brought the question up, eventually it would have been brought up for them, I believe, and they would have caught flack there. I mean, you're going to catch it no matter what you do in the situation. Someone's not going to be happy. Someone's going to say, just why are you going back 20 years and doing something? And the next person will say, you really should have gone back and done something. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to make everyone happy no matter what you do. So I guess the committee just needs to do what they ultimately feel is right.
Right. Which, I mean, back to what the purpose of the committee is to determine who has had an outstanding and made career long contributions to journalism. So, you know, I think that the best way for them to handle that, personally, my opinion is they need to look at it through that lens. But I can certainly understand if they choose to go the other direction and completely revoke that honor altogether. But I don't think the burden should be on the committee in the first place. The burden should have been on the employers of Charlie Rose, and obviously first and foremost on Charlie Rose himself, to conduct himself like a man and honor and respect other women and men that are in his workplace.
Oh, yes. Charlie Rose shouldn't have done what he did. People who knew about it should have addressed it instead of turning a blind eye. I mean, that's the common thread between all of them. There's always going to be bad people. There's always going to be people who are going to try something, who are in power, who are going to do something. And it's up to the people who have any influence over them, who find out about it, to do the right thing. And part of that, you know, you can't do something you don't know anything about. So I don't want to get into psychology or make too many judgments about whether or not people report things that happen. But if something happens and it's never reported to anyone, nothing can be done about it. It's just a fact. As hard as it may be to report it, as difficult as it may be, if no one is ever told, they can't do anything. Like, a society, no one can fix a problem we don't know about. It's like if you have a leaky faucet you don't know about, but my wife knows about it and never tells me, and then goes, well, why didn't you fix the leaky faucet? The cabinet rotted out. And I go, I didn't know we had a leaky faucet.
Wait, you husbands are supposed to know everything.
Apparently we're supposed to.
But anyways, that's, I guess, the next week's discussion.
There we go. But anyway, thank you for coming on and talking with us about this. What's becoming a saga, because more things are just coming out. Yeah. So we need to keep addressing them.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you to Brooke for coming on the show and again, jumping into that topic with us. We seem to not be able to escape it, but as we said, it seems like it's an important thing to really kind of keep our eye on, especially when it intersects with the state of North Carolina, for sure, whether it's through the presence of film activities going on here in the state, through government programs to attract her, whether it's through someone like Charlie Rose, who is from Henderson and went to Duke and got a couple degrees from there and is in the North Carolina Journalism Hall of Fame for UNC Chapel Hill. It just really is a topic that needs to be discussed and picked apart. But again, thank you to Brooke for coming on and talking with us about that, and thank you to Dr. Robert Libke for coming on and talking with us about the dues checkoff and whether or not the state has any role in doing any of that at all, actually. And again, thank you to you, the listeners. Thank you for coming back for another episode of What Matters in North Carolina. Again, we want you to subscribe to the show on whatever app you use or podcasting service you use to listen to the show. So just search What Matters in North Carolina. We want you to follow along with us on social media on Facebook and Twitter by searching What Matters NC on Facebook and Twitter. And we want to hear from you there. And you can check out other things that are going on and outside of just the shows. And We also want to hear from you on the call-in line at 919-747-8063. And again, that's 919-747-8063. And that, you can just leave us a minute or two message, something clean and concise. It can be a segment you want us to talk about. It can be something you want to rant about. Really, it's pretty open-ended. So give it a shot, 919-747-8063. And we'll catch you again next time.